Hello, everyone. I'm Trent Luce. Welcome to another edition of Rural Routes, the program where we gather every day at this time. Well, Neil Keene, we do it Monday through Friday anyway. And what we do is we get together and discuss the issues between rural and urban America. If you've been with me for the past 2 weeks, you know I've taken it upon myself to do a little world tour. We have had Canada, we had England, we've had Australia. I think we're going to have Australia again, just kind of getting a pulse of what's going on around the world. Well, I cannot do a world tour without going to my favorite European country, Ireland. No, wait, Ireland is coming to us. Neil Keene from Dublin on Skype.
Thank you, Trent.
I even got dressed up for you. I got all dressed up so that you could see me on Skype and you don't want to look at me.
I do. I can see you, Trent. I'm really impressed with your beautiful poncho. Yeah, it's very, very appealing. Suits you. It suits you very well.
Wait a minute. You're seeing me and I'm not seeing you?
Yeah, I think the one-way vision is good.
No, I can turn that off. So, how are things in Ireland?
Good, yeah. We've just had our Minister for Finance has just announced the budget for next year, and probably wasn't any great announcements there. It was kind of a budget that tried to appeal to everybody without making any significant impact for anyone. Overall, the economy is recovering pretty well. It was pretty well documented about the economic crash in Ireland in 2008, and being a small economy, it's recovered quite quickly. So we're seeing a lot of positivity around job creation and companies coming into the market expanding. However, we have got the challenges from an agri-food perspective of the volatility we're seeing globally, and we're experiencing some of the challenges associated with that volatility. So we've come off the back of 18, 24 months of lower milk prices. We're now looking at the global forecast for milk pricing and hoping that that's going to increase in 2017. All the indicators seem to be quite positive. And then on the beef side, we're seeing the relatively flatlining of beef prices for the last 12, 24 months. And I suppose one of the big challenges or one of the big questions from an Irish perspective, as you know, Trent, from your regular visits here, we're very dependent on our export markets. So what we're looking very closely at is trade deals and where can we open up new outlets for our beef and dairy. As you correctly forecasted 18 months ago on national radio in Ireland, the beef market opportunity within the US has not taken off as we hoped. The opportunity in China has not evolved as quickly as we hoped, but there has been some excellent efforts by everybody involved, from the packers and the our own Irish Food Board, in opening up those markets. However, the volumes maybe haven't translated. So there's a lot of activity going on around opening up new markets and trying to develop new business. And obviously the big challenge that did happen, or the big announcement that happened on the 23rd of June, was the decision by the British electorate to leave the European Union. And I know, as a big fan of the European Union, Trent, you'll obviously be quite astounded by that decision. So, however, in Ireland, there's a lot of apprehension about what that's going to mean. And already, in an agricultural context, we're seeing the impact on horticulture with the closure of 5 mushroom producers. Now, mushroom production is a small sector of the Irish agri-food economy. However, it is possibly the canary in the coal mine, in that it's indicating what's coming down the line in terms of, you know, challenges within our biggest export market for our food. We export over 50% of a lot of our food products into UK, and what's been the big problem there has been the weakening of the UK sterling. So sterling, the UK pound, has weakened. So therefore, overnight, Irish produce going into the UK has increased by 15 to 25%, depending on which day, which period you're looking at currency exchange rates. So hopefully I've painted some positivity there, Trent, but also there is a number of macro challenges as well. And we're also looking across the water with a high degree of interest. Every news segment on radio or television here is dominated by your upcoming elections. So, and that obviously, as one of our biggest partners, our biggest investors, certainly in Ireland, we're very interested to see the outcome of that election and what the impact will be.
We have an election taking place.
Yes, believe it or not.
It is absolutely the most asinine thing I've ever seen, Neil, the media coverage of this presidential election. It's like nothing else matters, and it is the most biased reporting I've ever seen. And it's interesting to get your take that your news is dominated by that as well.
Absolutely. Every country I visit, or even I was in Australia last March, and they were talking about it in Australia on all the as early as then. So it's a very long lead in, and it's, as you say, it's possibly has turned into a media circus. However, hopefully whoever is elected comes out with the right policies. That's the most important thing. That's make sure we have a strong U.S. economy, which ultimately impacts on the global economy.
Mm-hmm. My trip to Ireland, I remember a cab or a taxi ride that the cabbie actually got confrontational with me in Dublin. In fact, he turned to me. He stopped the car. He turned to me and he said, "Only an American would say that." And it was because I was being critical of Barack Obama. And I know why that is, because no matter what country I travel to, the media reports in other countries is not a bipartisan representation of what's going on here. It's always slanted to the liberal.
Yeah, there's obviously interesting movements in politics around Europe at the moment as well, and possibly some of it's moving slightly more right wing in terms of decision making. Mm-hmm. Taxi drivers in Ireland are always a very good indicator of European sentiments around politics and economics. So I think, yeah, Barack Obama has received wider acclaim outside of the U.S. than he has within the U.S. I know, speaking to yourself and other agricultural colleagues and rural-based people within the U.S., I know there's maybe been a degree of dissatisfaction.
A degree?
You know, so...
You're always kind, Neil. It's complete outrage. It's not a degree of dissatisfaction. Why is the Irish cab driver the pulse of what's going on?
Obviously, as you've seen, that straight away they're engaging with their clientele.
Right.
They don't just sit there and bring you from A to B. They sit there and interrogate you, and they act as our kind of consumer insights surveyors. So. Yeah, they're very good on telling us where we're at in terms of economic recovery and where to next.
Ours don't speak English. Otherwise, that would be probably the case here, too.
That's unfortunate. We'll have to export a few Irish taxi drivers over to you.
We'll take your... I know, I think I'd rather have your beef than your taxi driver after my one experience.
We'll definitely send some of that over to you, Trent, if you can organize some shipments.
Yeah. So you answered two questions before I can even ask them in that first segment. And just so you know, Neil, I've got a minute and a half, so it puts me in a precarious position. So I'll just bring it out there. I was going to ask, it's now been a year and a half, nearly 2 years, actually. It was January 2015. When your Minister of Agriculture announced great news, the white savior to all beef woes in Ireland were going into the U.S. I was going to ask you how that worked, but you nearly answered that question. It's not been what was promised.
Yeah, look, and I think you hit the nail on the head at the time, and you obviously highlighted the importance of the burger markets to the U.S., I think the Irish hope was that we'd be able to target maybe higher value cuts, mm-hmm. and more of the loin. And ultimately that hasn't quite materialized. There's different reasons being put forward as to why it hasn't materialized. I know there's a lot of hard work going in by a number of our packing plants and their export teams. So I think the other aspect that's been influenced, obviously there's other beef from other parts of the world, in particular Australian and New Zealand beef coming into the US in larger volumes, which is probably competing with some of the potential markets for Irish grass-fed beef. So that's in itself presents presents a competitive market for us to export into. So, listen, we will still, I think the players from Ireland will still be trying to compete in that kind of, especially in that Northeast American corridor and a lot of the Irish expat community, and try and tap into a lot of that emotional connection there as well with Irish beef. But yes, unfortunately, it hasn't been the raging success or in terms of volumes we were hoping for back in January 2015, Trent.
Neil Keane, my guest. He's coming to us from Dublin, Ireland. We'll be back with more Rural Route after this.
Quickly want to remind you about this week's Superior Livestock Auction on Friday. 19,000 head of cattle will be selling. That sale can be viewed on Dish Network Channel 232 or the website, superiorlivestock.com. While you are there, check out what has been posted this week with the country page. It's all about marketing cattle the superior way. Again, superiorlivestock.com.
Welcome back to Rural Routes. I'm Trent Luce, continuing the world tour. Neil Keane, my buddy from Ireland. You mentioned my numerous trips to Ireland. Well, you could organize another one of those. No, actually, I don't want to leave my home soil right now. But let's plan one down the road, okay?
Definitely.
Have you been to the States lately?
I haven't been. No, not since May, unfortunately.
Yeah. I missed the All-Tech Symposium, which we don't call it a symposium anymore, but did I miss anything worth seeing?
Steve Wozniak was hugely impressive on the whole technology and application of technology and disruptive innovators. Alan Mulally from Ford was a real eye-opener in terms of how you introduce lean management into an organization. Really impressive, very humble guy. Really easy person, very, very, a lot of inspiring stories and real simple leadership in terms of how he changed that organization around when it was under a lot of challenge and stress. Obviously the introduction, the All-Tech, the Keenan wagon this year was the big addition. We acquired a company called Keenan, which makes feed mixer wagons in April. Mm-hmm. And we had one of our new feeder wagons present at the banquet the night before, right in the middle of the banquet. It wasn't actually making up the meals, but it was.
There you go. Answering my question again before I ask it. Go ahead, Neil.
Sorry, I'm talking too much, but
no, not at all.
That was a real great attraction to have there, and a great feature to have as part of the event is. It certainly attracted a lot of attention. So, yeah, it's been a fantastic opportunity for All-Tech. Very strong Irish brands. They have done an excellent job in adding value to Irish dairy and beef customers and dairy and beef customers right around the world. So a really great complementary fit for All-Tech.
You said something just before we started, and I said you're wasting great radio stuff. You mentioned that beef and dairy were doing well in the U.S. You got that message? Prices?
Yeah, you were mentioning that it's been tougher recently for the beef and dairy, more recently.
Absolutely. For the past 2 years, well, let's talk beef first. For the past 2 years, we've done nothing but spiral down. And 2 years ago this month, I sold my calves at 600 pounds for $2.40 a pound. Which, by the way, Neil, is that's out of this world. That's not sustainable. You can't continue to do that.
No.
I'm not saying that you should. In fact, by the time the calves were loaded, the market had started going down, and they were worth $500 less by the time they were shipped from the day they were sold. And we're now at that same point. So I'm going to ship my calves next week. They were sold in July. They were sold in July for $1.45 on 6 weights a pound. And I think those calves today are worth maybe $1.15. So it's just, I heard fed cattle market prices this week are less than a dollar. So you're looking at people who have paid. There's $500 a head losses in the feedlot right now. And Canada's largest feedlot announced 2-3 weeks ago in Alberta that they're closing their doors because they can't take it anymore.
No, it's hugely. It's very tough. I remember being in U.S. That's U.S. actually, sorry, and Alberta over two years ago would have been the May 2014, and yeah, the prices being received at the time were record levels. That was similar. I remember being in Kansas as well, and they were enjoying huge returns on fed cattle, and cow-calf operators receiving huge returns. But, I mean, there was a lot of acknowledgement. The reason for that spike in the cattle prices was largely down to the low cow population.
Right.
You know, I think it was the lowest U.S. cow-calf population since 1950. So I think you would like to think maybe in terms of hedging and forecasting that people had anticipated maybe some of these dips, but certainly the guys who bought that beef, those calves from you at $2.47 a pound, that's a big challenge to try and make a return on that type of beef, having paid that money. So I think, you know, from a European or from an Irish perspective, we're seeing that volatility, and equally, how do we manage it? And historically, we wouldn't have had the mechanisms in place to manage it that you guys would have had. So we've now got measurements in place, such as being able to sell a certain proportion of your milk forward, or being able to avail of what they call income averaging schemes. So you can average your income over 5 years, so you're not paying a big proportion of tax, you know, say last year, and then this year when you're making no money. You know, in years where you're making very little money and you have to pay off a lot of tax, you can average that out over 5 years. The Australians have implemented that program pretty well, and it helps to offset quite a lot of the risk. So I think a lot of those kind of management tools are being brought in by producers and being supported in many cases by governments as well to help offset the volatility. But it's certainly a lot of pain that I think when you had such a high, unfortunately the low now is a big low.
Yeah. Just out of curiosity, what do you have a ballpark number on percentage of income that's paid as tax in Ireland?
On farming?
Yes.
I don't off the top of my head.
So,
too much is probably what the answer would be.
That's a good answer. Let me just give you a ballpark. So, U.S. tax code is based upon the amount of money that you make, you net. And so if you are in that, let's just say, $100,000 range, which was way above our median income, you're roughly in the 15 to 20% tax bracket. Would that be comparable?
Yeah, probably a bit higher than that.
I would assume it was higher.
Yeah, no, I know. Certainly in an Irish context, our taxes are extremely high.
Yeah. Well, you've got to keep those government subsidies funded somehow.
Yeah, we also have to keep the rural communities supported as well. I was at an event last week. It was called Nuffield. It's a very impressive organization. I think it's over 60 years old now. It's in Australia, UK, Ireland, Netherlands, Canada, and France, and they're actually trying to develop a presence in the US, and it basically provides a scholarship to either farmers or people working within agri-business to travel the world for 12 months and explore maybe a topic of interest to them. And one of the guys, they spend 6 weeks traveling through different regions with people from other countries, and they took a lot of flack from the Australians and the Canadians about the subsidy schemes within the EU. And I think what highlighted to a lot of the guys was traveling through maybe rural Australia and unfortunately rural US, when they've seen a lot of small towns which have been virtually abandoned, it gave them a bit more of a perspective maybe on what the role of the common agricultural policy is and why those subsidies are in place. Certainly there's a lot of farmers who prefer to, a lot of younger farmers who would love to be able to farm and farm profitably without market supports. However, You know, I think the realization is certainly there that the level of support that gives to rural communities is important. And the money that's created within those communities, there's a, I think they based the income, or they say the income received, or the profitability of a dairy farm, the multiplier effect within the rural community is something like six. You multiply that by six again in terms of the money that's generated within the community and what's spent. And I know one of the guys mentioned the other day that on average, a farmer earning money within, you know, or a farmer within an Irish context will spend that money within 25 miles of his home. Mm-hmm. You know, so it is important that that profitability is. Yeah. And I know you're envious. I know you're envious of that trend, but I think at the moment, until we get something else, it's an important measure that's there.
Rural Route, Neil Keane, my guest from Dublin, Ireland. We'll take a break. We'll come back with more after this.
See, speaking of a little European influence, I'm typically critical, but I did find some technology from Europe for feeding my sows that I'm quite fond of. I should say Kelly is quite fond of, Neil. It's the MPS Agri Systems. It's a computerized electronic sow feeding system. It takes a little work to get the sows trained to that, in particular the gilts. We're still working through some of that. In fact, a breakfast conversation with our girls said, I thought this was going to be just like easy. Well, it is. Once you get the sows trained to walk in and have the computer deliver the exact amount of feed that each individual sow should have on a daily basis. It is individual care. That is what makes it so attractive to me. And, of course, the simple aspect of not carrying 5-gallon buckets anymore. More information about the electronic feeding world of MPS Agri is on the web, mpsagri.co.uk.
Welcome back to Rural Routes. I'm Trent Luce. Neil Keane from Dublin, Ireland, just got out of the... He went out and took a taxi ride during the break, folks, just so that he could come back with the newest polling information from the Dublin taxi drivers.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, so you said something that has to be addressed. I can't let it... Nobody is in favor of a strong rural economy more than Trent Luce, okay? But number one, we're going to accomplish that through our own means, supply and demand of the products that we produce. We're not going to rely on any, zero, government assistance to make that happen. And yes, we do have some small rural towns, particularly in the Great Plains of America, that have vanished. But let's put that into context, Neil. We don't need every little town to flourish, because why did we have a town every 8 miles? Because that's what, and when the town was established, that's the amount of distance that a rancher, farmer, could get on his horse and buggy, go to town, and get back in a day. Well, I got news for you. We don't have a lot of farmers going to town in a horse and buggy anymore, although I'd like that. So to rely on a government program to enable every little small town, I want small, healthy, regional communities. And then we're 11 miles from a town of 1,000 people where the girls go to school. There might be 850. And then we're 40 miles from a town that's 20,000. Well, there's nothing wrong with that, because my horse and buggy can get to that town 40 miles away and back before noon.
I disagree, to be honest, because my travels through U.S. and Australia in particular, I've unfortunately, for different reasons, maybe some of it could be climate and drought as well, but you do see a lot of towns that have really seemed to have suffered and are lacking maybe young life. And I think that's a sad thing. And but even having said that, within Ireland, with our subsidies, as you mentioned, we have seen a challenge within rural communities. And you will always see a natural exodus of young people from those towns. But I think, look, something needs to be looked at in terms of decentralizing a lot of what happens across the Western world. I mean, you're seeing it now in China, a huge level of urbanization. I was watching a YouTube video there this morning. It was Arthur Clarke forecasting technology of the future. That was back in 1963. And he talked about how in the future communications would mean that the globe would become a very small place, which it has. And there, you know, there's Trent Luce talking in Nebraska, talking to Neil Keane for free on Skype, based in Ireland, whatever, over 3,000 miles away.
And people in Australia listening, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. That lucky them.
Yeah.
So I think that's been really effective. But what it hasn't done in many ways, what that visionary maybe foresaw, was how has that helped to enrich rural life? And that's one of the things, certainly within an Irish context, we're hoping in the next couple of years to launch out an improved communications platform in terms of internet broadband transfer, which hopefully will help to enable more rural businesses to be able to work remotely. So there's a number of things people are looking at in terms of how do we re-energize and invigorate rural areas to make sure that there is young people there and families able to, because it is a fantastic upbringing to be able to bring up a family in a rural environment, but obviously you need a strong rural economy to be able to make that happen. Like, I was brought up in an urban environment, believe it or not. Both my parents are from farms, but I was brought up in an urban environment in Dublin. I now live an hour from Dublin in a place called Wicklow, and that's I live rurally. But you know, that's a choice we made, and I enjoyed being brought up in a city, but equally I'm enjoying being able to bring my family up in a rural area. Unfortunately, for a lot of Irish people, that choice is not there, and a lot of them do have to be located in an urban environment. And the challenge within an Irish context now for a lot of my generation is being able to get affordable housing, because that over demand to live in Dublin, which is our largest city, has pushed up the price of housing. So it's made a huge challenge for families to, in terms of affordability of housing. So it is that urban rural divide is even in a small country like Ireland, it is something that's there, and it can be a little bit divisive at times when it comes to resource allocation and investment in infrastructure.
Look, we both said that we agree we want to skin the cat. You just come about skinning the cat in a different method than I do. You want the government to help. I don't want the government to help. I think that it's just your own mindset to sit back and say, well, I've got to have somebody get me broadband internet to make my business flourish in rural America. You make happen what you want to have happen, and if you continue to sit back and wait for somebody to create a path for you to make that happen, you're going to be sadly disappointed.
Yeah, again, I disagree. I think
I didn't bring somebody on here that wants to agree with me, Neil. I can talk to
No, exactly. Window. Yeah, it'd be a bit boring if it was going to be that scenario. The subsidies in Europe, if they were to be withdrawn, I think a cold turkey situation, if they were taken out straight away, I think it would be fine. But will the retailer be prepared to pay for more expensive food? Because that's the reality. Like, if you look initially when the Common Agricultural Policy was put into place, one of the guiding principles was to ensure availability of food and to offset any food scarcities. I wonder what would be the implications, or what would be the response from retailers, and most importantly from the consumer, because the consumer has a big say in what happens with a lot of these type of measures. What would their response be? Mm-hmm. And at the moment, the way the profitability within farming, it's not profitable enough to be able to continue without the subsidies that are in place based on the prices that consumers are prepared to pay for vegetables or meat or dairy.
I agree with that statement. But
Trent, come on, you need to disagree.
No, I agree that if the farmer did not receive a subsidy in Europe right now, the farmer would be in trouble and the country's food supply. But let's look at the big picture. You import more food than you produce now. And the reason that the costs are so high and the unaffordable production continues to take place is that you are dealt a unnecessary pile of regulations that do nothing for anybody involved, including the consumer, primarily the consumer. All of those regulations that you have, in most cases rejecting technology, enables it limits the ability for the European farmer to feed people efficiently.
No, I think the regulatory framework that's in place, yes, there is at times, there is excessive bureaucracy, but I think the state, you know, having visited a number of countries, I think what we have within Europe, the safety framework and the regulatory framework, unfortunately, we do have breakdowns in that at times, and there has been food scares and fraud. However, by comparison, and then in terms of the number of incidents, our level of food safety is leading in terms of globally, in terms of low levels of food contamination, etc. So I do think, you know, and people will look cynically upon the European Union and look at some of the bureaucracies there, and it's obviously come under renewed challenge with the Brexit decision. However, there is a very important regulatory framework there that helps to ensure that consumers get safe food. And unfortunately, on an annual basis, the food industry does kill people through food safety challenges that do happen. And I think everything that can be done to safeguard healthy eating is important. I mean, if you look at what we've done on the antibiotic and the regulations around that, that's industry leading. And now we've got some of the world's largest retailers following that example in terms of how antibiotics are regulated.
Yeah, and limiting the amount of antibiotics used by the farmer to what end game? It's not because I had a friend, a veterinarian friend, who was at that conference in the Netherlands, and the discussion about the European antibiotic regulations were discussed. But what was never brought forth is, what have we gained by limiting the antibiotics used on food animal agriculture? What's the net gain other than fewer antibiotics used?
The net gain needs to be a scenario where we're not coming across a higher incidence of, and it's not all related, certainly isn't all related back to animal administration, but it's moving towards a more, what I would call, judicious use of antibiotics within human and animals. So is there opportunities where we can use less antibiotics? Is there opportunities around a lot of the farmers, a lot of these practices are in place in terms of management practices, sanitary practices, hygiene, measures around minimizing animal stress, more strategic supplementation to minimize the effects of stress, vaccination, etc. All those type of measures are in place there to manage antibiotic use. But I think this is, again, one of those scenarios where agriculture needs to be on the front foot in managing how we are challenging, how we defending how our side of the situation. Like, you've seen the Economist article supplement nearly around antibiotic microbial resistance back in May. Like, agriculture needs to be telling its story in terms of how we are leading and trying to minimize antibiotic resistance in humans via the food chain. And it's important that we are in a situation where we're leading that. And I think the European Union, through our regulatory frameworks around antibiotics and growth promoters, we are leading that, and we can defend our position on that. But I think, you know, it's not about demonizing what somebody else is doing either, because you don't want to go down that route. But I think in general, it's about agricultural incorporated or agri-food incorporated being able to defend our position, or being able to articulate our position very confidently and be able to say, look, we produce safe, tasty, healthy food.
With only 20 seconds left in this segment, I'm going to just say Neil Keane and I 100% agree that we need the judicious use of antibiotics, use antibiotics for a specific purpose, and that is the judicious use. We'll be back with the final segment of Rural Routes with Neil Keane from Dublin, Ireland, after this.
And I want to take this opportunity to remind you about the All-American Beef Battalion, a group of men and women from farm and ranch country throughout the nation, not only the Great Plains, who have formed the All-American Beef Battalion to say thank you to our nation's soldiers, sailors, airmen, marines, and Coast Guardians. It's not just a fly-by-night outfit. Grills have been built with farmer ingenuity to rotisserie cook 700 one-pound ribeyes at a time. This is a commitment not only of the effort, but the time, the equipment, because it's very satisfying to give a hand of thanks to these individuals who have risked everything for your and my freedom. If you would like to be involved or get more information about the All-American Beef Battalion, that's the simplest thing you can do. Take your browser to www.steaksfortroops.com. contribute, donate some time, build a grill, maybe donate a calf. Whatever might be up your sleeve, make it known at stakesfortroops.com. 9 years and running, friends.
Welcome back to Rural Routes. I'm Trent Lewis alongside Neil Keane. Just a little ocean in between us. He's coming to us from Dublin, Ireland. My favorite, I repeat, and I stand by this, my favorite European country. I've said many times publicly, Neil, that Ireland is the breadbasket of Europe. Ireland typically does agriculture right. It's only limited by the EU and your own Irish government. You don't need to respond to that.
I think it is easy to knock government, and certainly government is not perfect, but I think by comparison to other governments, I think at least within Ireland, we do have a government where they recognize the importance of agriculture, and that's probably down to political influence as well within Ireland and the organizations that are there. So there is possibly challenges in Europe and maybe bureaucracy at times. However, I do think from an Irish context, we do have, and having lived outside of Ireland for over 10 years and travelled in many different countries, I do think we have a very supportive government towards farming, and a government that realises, and maybe more laterally have had to realise after the pain of the economic crash in 2008, have realised the importance of agri-food. So, sorry, Trent, just that was my little soapbox there.
You need to include that. Abigail Cutts is from Elston, UK. She was my UK guest last week. And she was sharing some numbers that I think absolutely blew the mind of my listeners. But she's wanting to sell a pub. So if you're looking for a pub right on the Trent River in England, I know where you can find one, Neil. But she wants 400,000. Is it sterling?
Yep, 400,000 pounds sterling, yeah.
Pounds sterling. And so we did the math, and that's $750,000 U.S. dollars. And she wants to sell the pub because she's going to school to be a farmer, and she wants to buy a farm, and she's hoping that she can afford a 10-acre farm. And so I asked her what that 10-acre farm would cost, and with the house, with all the necessary living quarters, the number she gave us for 10-acre farm was roughly, in U.S. dollars, $1.2 million. Can that be real?
Sorry to give this answer, but the G word, depending on the location, obviously if it's...
And where do we vote for you for president, Neil Keane?
No, look, if it's close to London, you're obviously looking at crazy money anyway because of location. You obviously go further north or further southwest where there's equally good land in the UK, and yes, you're looking at approximately, yeah, for some of the best land, you know, upwards of £10,000 sterling an acre, which is $12,000 per acre. If you look at the exchange rate today, one British pound buys you $1.22 US dollars.
So give us a sense of Ireland in terms of land values, and I didn't get to what everybody told me would be my favorite part of Ireland, Western Ireland.
Yeah, so Western Ireland's a beautiful area, lovely scenery, can be a little bit more marginal in certain areas with land fertility, but land in Ireland, one thing when it comes to land values and land purchasing is logic sometimes isn't part of the equation. So motion takes over, and our attachment to land, because of our history, maybe distorts the real value of land. So we tend to maybe pay in excess of what the actual return on that land would deliver. Whereas, you know, if you probably look at countries such as the US or Australia, land has a more transactional and return-based value, as opposed to maybe a person buying land because there's an emotional driver there convincing them that they need to make that purchase.
That's no different than here at home. We had land values, I don't know, significantly higher than what they needed to be just for emotional reasons.
Yeah, I mean, we'd have, in certain parts, we'd have moments, we'd have people spending, for good land, 10 to 15,000 euros, which is probably approximately something similar, about 11,000 US dollars per acre. Mm-hmm. But that, to actually make a return on that land, purchase, actually takes quite a few years. The other one that can maybe lack logical as well at times is land rental, and people renting ground for in excess of $1,000, well, $600-$700 a year for, say, growing vegetables, etc. So, and then if you look in other countries though around Europe as well, you look in the Netherlands, for example, and you can get land there for upwards of 50,000-60,000 euros per acre. And similarly in Italy, if you're within maybe even an hour of Milan, you could be paying 50,000-60,000 euros per acre also. That'd be within the, wow, the famous Po Valley. Yeah, so, yeah, land values, they sometimes tend to lack logic, yeah, in terms of how they're valued.
Hey, you asked me, and I want to get back to this, and it's something I'm not directly involved with, but I hear from my dairy friends, particularly Northeast Colorado, that 2016, for the most part, has been an extremely tough year. I've got a neighbor who dairies, and he took a part-time job at one point in time this winter because the dairy sector has been really, really tough. But I just checked current milk prices. They're about $17 a hundred, which I think is not losing money. It's at least at break-even. And with our feed costs, Neil, we're very beneficial. Now our livestock agriculture would be in dire straits. So I think the dairy industry has recovered a bit in 2016, and they're at least at break even, just to answer your question. In Ireland, dairymen, are they in better shape than the beef producer?
No. I think some of them, depending again on how heavily borrowed they are, some of them, we've had a significant, with the abandonment of milk quotas in the European Union last March. Excuse me. Last March, we've seen a number of new entrants come into the Irish dairy production, and obviously with that came a certain level of borrowings. But I don't think anybody foresaw the crash that came in world dairy milk prices. So yeah, there has been a degree of challenge. But as always in the Irish situation, one of our competitive advantages, or our sources of competitive advantage, is the grazing. So we have that opportunity to produce milk at a lower cost per liter than, you know, our counterparts in continental Europe, and where feed costs can run a lot higher, because maybe the price of inputs or feed didn't come as low as what the correlated milk price did. So no, unfortunately, some of our dairy producers have experienced a tough 12 to 18 months. But again, like, some of them have taken advantage of some of the mechanisms that were there in place in terms of hedging milk forward, and in some scenarios hedging milk pricing forward. And it, you know, if they're fortunate not to have too much borrowings, then they're able to ride out the lower milk price challenge. But we're all looking forward to quarter one, quarter two next year, when the Irish milk production ramps up again, when we have quite a seasonal calving. A lot of our cows calve in our springtime, February, March, and the increase in milk production happens from there on. So we're hoping that these global dairy trade markets stay strong. The price of whey and skim milk powder are very strong heading into the middle of 2017.
I think as much of anything of our frustration in the States is that I told you earlier what a depreciated calf is today compared to 2 years ago. I mean, it's between $500 and $800 per head. Milk prices were in the tank literally for a period of time. And the frustration is that we go to the grocery store and the price at the retail level is pretty much the same as it was at the height of the beef cattle prices. In other words, the price in the store that the consumer pays does not seem to ebb and flow as much as what the farmer gets. And I think that's the source of a lot of frustration. Would you experience the same thing?
Yes, but if you're a price taker, that's mm-hmm. that's the challenge within that supply chain. And if you have yourself and you're in a situation, and it's, yes, don't get me wrong, it's extremely unfair, and they look at the price differentials along that supply chain. But if you're a price taker within that supply chain, unfortunately, you are at the mercy of other stakeholders that are going to be able to preserve, if not enhance, their margin in times like that when the price does go down. I mean, yeah, like if I look in Ireland's situation, I think the average milk price per litre is maybe 24 cents a litre, but the retail price, I could buy 3 litres of milk the other day in the retail outlet for 80 cents a litre. So there's quite a markup there mm-hmm. between farm gate price and the retail price.
So now you've opened up the whole next show that you do with me is Neil Keane 101 on how we become a price maker instead of a price taker. When do you want to do that?
I think there's a lot of people who've done a really good job out there and have been far braver than I have in terms of adding value to their own produce at the farm gate and being able to add that value and be able to command higher prices. It's certainly a difficult thing to do. And it's maybe a difficult thing in certain situations to scale. But if you can create that value at the farm gate, then you are in a position to be able to control control that margin maybe a little bit better. So you're not in that price taker situation. Look, it's a very divisive subject, and it's always a topic of discussion wherever you are. But I think we're all learning the volatility situation and how to manage that more effectively and how to overcome the troughs when they do happen.
Okay, perfect. Neil, it's been everything I thought it would be and more. We'll do it again soon.
Thank you, Trent. Thank you all.
Because I just remembered that trip you had to Alberta was really the last time I saw you and the last time you escaped the loose microphone, so I got you now.
That's right, 2014.
Yeah, that's too long, my friend.
Yeah, we'll have to do it again soon.
We have successfully journeyed down the road connecting rural and urban America and rural and urban Ireland with Neil Keane's assistance from Dublin. Both of us remind you that all roads do lead to a rural route.
And finally today, I want to come back and remind you about where we started. Superior Livestock Auction. This week, the video sale selling 19,000 head of cattle. You can get full details about what is selling. That does include 500 head of bred females. Deerfield, Kansas, there's a split load of cattle available on the country page. A lot of paperwork behind them. Good paperwork. Value-added paperwork. Cushing, Oklahoma, there's a split load. Recluse, Wyoming, there's a current bid on a set of calves. All of these calves are delivery yet this fall, most of them in October. Here's a set of Missouri calves, delivery in December, split load. People are beginning to understand the split load concept. Sharon, Kansas, two loads from Sharon, Kansas, couple loads from Muleshoe, Texas. Split load means that they're not all steers or heifers. They are a combination of both. That's how I sell my cattle on Superior, and I encourage you to check out and find your rep in marketing cattle the Superior way in 2017. Details online. It's coming close, folks. Details at SuperiorLivestock.com.